Welcome to Geek Actually, episode 82 for the 1st of May, 2010, and I blew it again, but I'll come back to that in just a second. We're starting very, very late here for our live viewers. I do apologize. I'm Dave McVeigh. I'm your host, and I'm joined in studio, as always, by Josh Philpott. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm having a good morning. I actually slept well, and though it may have taken me about 2.5 hours to get to normal, I am here and feeling good.
I'm hearing you, man. It took me a while to get started today.
I was turning that key, but just all I was getting was the engine ticking over.
It's like Katie handed me this instant coffee, and it's just like, down, got you. You drank that fast. It's like, starter motor. Let's go get a real one.
System reboot.
And that voice you're hearing, of course, is Ben O'Brien returning after a four-week hiatus. How are you, Ben?
I'm good. I'm good.
I love the T-shirt.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's fading with age, like Susan Sarandon.
But as it should, because it should
be. High five for that one.
Evil. Moving quote. It's all right.
Bazinga.
Oh, that's just mean and nasty. All right, so for anybody who's listening to the audio podcast and we're talking about starting off late and all that sort of stuff, we do go out live typically at 12 p.m. We are often late, but we do start the recording. We start the broadcast at least at 12, and so you can come and just kind of watch us futzing around doing nothing if you want, but
Josh playing an iPhone game.
Yeah, absolutely. We play a bit of Girl from Ipanema, which we forgot to actually put on earlier today. But anyway, we do go out.
Yes, Australian. It's a very large-ish today, Octane. Very large-ish.
Yeah, very large-ish. But yes, so our typical start time, whether we actually start the show on time or not, is 12 p.m. on Saturdays.
We're usually all right. We're usually 15 minutes out at worst, and usually we'll be online by like 5 minutes after that period of time. Today was just a bit.
Well, because, as you say, we had a lot of trouble starting today.
It wasn't only that. It's also the fact that you have been spending a lot of time revamping the site.
Yeah, and if you haven't been to geekactually.com,
check it out. It is freaking awesome.
Still got a little bit more work. We actually have a little Greta construction sign up there because we're building it as, it's kind of like living in a house while you renovate it. You know, we are trying to do the renovations around.
Yeah, without the paint fumes.
And it's going to be much more updated, much more recent, much more regularly now as well, which would be awesome.
Because we all want to get our little picture in that little slideshow. So. we're all trying to get in there. But so do have a look at geekactually.com. It is going through a revamp. As I said on the post, there are going to be ugly moments. Just bear with us through the ugly bits, because the reason why we're doing it live while it's on is because if we close the site down, which we had to do on Thursday, it kills the feeds. So even on iTunes, you won't be able to get the podcast. So we're trying to keep the feeds open as much as possible. So therefore, we have to kind of work while we're open. So it's kind of messy. But we're getting there, and hopefully by the end of this weekend, we'll be fully moved in and it'll be ready to go. All the same content is there. Come and have a look at that. All right, so this week, what are we doing? All right, so for those who have never joined a show like this before, this is basically our Week in Geek. We cover a little bit of tech, we cover a little bit of film, we cover a little bit of anything basically that comes to our minds, and then we go into an after show afterwards, which is a complete free-for-all. So stick around for the after show. And for those who wonder why they aren't hearing the after show at the end of this episode, it actually gets released separately on the Wednesday. So have a look for that on the same feed. You'll see the after shows, and last week we talked about a matter of things, but we let Dave also talk about Kick-Ass. This week, we're actually going to talk about the original Brothers, which we all reviewed the remake.
Broadway.
So we're going to have and we're probably massacring that as well. Who knows how those crazy days.
I think it's pronounced Matthew Broadway.
All right, so this week we have in tech, it is official. There are female geeks, and I have proof.
Well, Celine was proof.
Well, absolutely. But Dave always tells us there's no such thing as a female geek. Well, I have proof that there are, other than Celine. In fact, it's going to...
There's proof that she actually exists, though, either.
Well, yeah, we have an empty chair. One day, hopefully, we'll fill this chair. So, hopefully that's made her suddenly go, I better get down there. So we're also going to talk about the R18+ rating, because we have been talking a lot about the PAL GN and game retail stores petition that's been... We have results, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. And we're also going to talk about why Steve Jobs doesn't like Flash. All this time, he's been basically going on and on and on about how he's never putting Flash on the iPhone. Well, we now know why. And he wrote a 7-page thesis, basically, about why he doesn't like Flash. We're not going to go through the whole 7 pages, but we are going to talk a little bit about that. In entertainment news, the Jonah Hex trailer has arrived.
Oh, and the vomiting starts.
And the vomiting starts. No 3D for the new Elm Street remake, which I'm really happy about. And the director stood his ground. So we'll have a talk about that as well. Titans will clash again. Apparently a sequel is in the works. And later we are going to have multiple geekgasms as we review Iron Man 2.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first of all, let's get ourselves started straight away and go into the tech news and basically say Steve Jobs. And for those who don't know who Steve Jobs is, where the hell have you been? But if you don't know who Steve Jobs is, here he is, a picture of him. This is when he was...
I will rule the world.
I will rule the world. Yes, this is when he was actually looking a little bit healthier, too. But anyway, so this is Steve Jobs. And I've got to tell you, he's obviously feeling a lot better after his surgery. And he's obviously getting back because he's gotten very plucky.
I think you'll find he actually had his emotion chip removed.
So, yeah, he's getting very plucky and very talkative. He's actually answering emails. He's going through the Apple mailbag and just randomly answering people's emails personally.
Yes, I would like to enlarge my penis.
Do you think he actually just picks one randomly, like just loads up his 10,000 emails and just goes scroll, scroll, scroll,
that
click?
But his answers are always really good. Things like, you know, will the iPhone do this and this and this, long questions, and he'll just answer it, no. Or yes. He has written this big long post, which you can find at apple.com, about why he doesn't like Flash. And he goes on all the usual basic excuses and this and that, and you know, and it's blah blah blah. But anyway, the things that really stuck to my mind about this were the fact he actually says, I love this because it's like double standards. Are you ready for the double standards? He says, Adobe's Flash products are 100% proprietary. Hang on, pot, kettle, black. they are only available from Adobe, and Adobe has sole authority as to the future enhancements, pricing, etc. Bizarro world.
just look over that one. It'll just make your brain explode.
Okay. While Adobe's Flash products are widely available, this does not mean that they are open, since they are controlled entirely by Adobe and available only from Adobe. By almost any definition, Flash is a closed system. Wait a minute. Once again, I'm still stuck with this concept. Apple is the most closed environment you can have.
Exactly. So basically what he's saying is I can't make money.
I can't control it. So therefore
I'm not interested.
They won't bow down at the altar of Job.
Okay, so he does actually counter that. And he actually says, Apple has many proprietary products too.
Yep.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Okay. He says, though the operating system for the iPhone, iPod, and iPad is proprietary, we strongly believe that all standards pertaining to the web should be open. All right, so this was his argument. Now, he actually says, rather than use Flash, Apple has adopted HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript, all open standards.
Mm-hmm.
It says, Apple's mobile devices all ship with high-performance, low-power implementations of these open standards, etc., etc. He goes on to say that what he's saying is that Apple is a hog. Adobe Flash is a hog, both memory-wise and battery-wise. And all you have to do is fire up something like Farmville, for instance, as an example, on a MacBook, and feel that fan kick into gear and how hot that machine gets just running that Flash application. Mm. So he basically is saying that he prefers that if it's going to be web-based, forget the operating systems and stuff. If it's going to be a web-based standard, it should be open source. Mm. He actually goes on to say things like, the Safari browser was actually an extension of an experiment that Apple started called WebKit, which was a completely open source browser initiative to create the best browser they could create under WebKit, which is what the core engine is underneath Safari. And funnily enough, is also the core engine underneath Chrome.
Yeah.
So even Google is going with that. So you look at it and go, he's got the right idea. And I can understand where he's coming from. The other point that he actually makes, though, he says Adobe has reportedly said that Apple mobile devices cannot access the full web, quote unquote, their quote, because 75% of the video on the web is in Flash. What they don't say is that almost all of this video is also available in the more modern format, H.264. And viewable on iPhones, iPods, and iPads. It says YouTube, with an estimated 40% of the web's video, shines in an app bundled on all Apple mobile devices.
Yeah.
Because they're feeding the H.264. And in fact, there is now a experimental YouTube page, which isn't in his article, but there is actually an experimental YouTube page, which is entire YouTube built in HTML5. Mm. And you can actually go there. It's a beta at this point. But eventually what's going to happen is YouTube is just going to switch over. And they're just going to say, we're just going to go H.264, which is better quality video, lower resources. Because as he said, the reason why it is a battery drain, he says, to achieve long battery life when playing video, mobile devices must decode the video in hardware. Decoding it in software uses too much power.
Damn right.
So therefore, if it's the device can natively read H.264, it is not using as much power as having to decode a flash video.
Mm.
So his arguments are solid. He goes on, there's a whole bunch of others which you kind of go, 50%, 60% maybe of his arguments.
Yeah.
It didn't need to be 7 pages long.
No, but, he's done his rebuttal. And I'm sorry, but I do agree with him, man. I hate Flash.
Especially
in a netbook fashion, if I load up a page and it has something in Flash, I instantly groan because I'm just like, this is going to mean
my netbook, which you're using right now, the Samsung over on the desk right there, grinds to a halt on Flash applications.
Exactly. If I've got 5 windows open, I can be doing that fine. If I've got one Flash video loading while I'm looking at pages, my entire internet grinds to a halt.
Well, with Snake Oz, you actually can. But the point is that you stream on the Ustream site. Snake Oz in the chat room has said, but you still can't stream Ustream.
Mm.
You can, but you're restricted to their native app, which is going out at 264, H.264. The actual site is in Flash, but that is going to be kicked over. If they're already starting to do H.264 conversions for their own app, you know damn well that means under the hood there's a 264 conversion coming out for even Ustream, which we wait for. As the irony is, we hate Flash, and yet we're using Flash to put out this show.
Bitter irony.
But it won't be for long. I'm hoping that Ustream will convert over. Now, the thing that pisses me off about the Ustream app on the iPhone is that it's not the entire Ustream. It's only their selected items.
Mm.
So we're not there, for instance. Mm. And there's no way of figuring out how to get on there. It's only by rating. So I'm hoping they'll open that up to the entire library. And once they do that, hopefully we'll be there. And then at that point, I'll say, stop watching it on the web. Just go straight to your iPhone.
Yeah.
Because it'll be faster. Adobe has hit back.
I'm looking forward to this. God, I miss the tech war.
Oh, man, it's good stuff. Now, I'm going to massacre this name. Shantanu Narayan, I have no idea if I pronounced that right or not, who is Adobe's top man, basically came back and said, our view of the world is multi-platform and we will stick to it.
Multi-platform?
He goes on to say, we're saying to Apple, and this is to quote him, we're saying, let consumers pick. If this technology doesn't work, consumers won't pick it. The fact that people have built applications using our technology, the fact that they've deployed it, means it benefits publishers and it benefits consumers. No, it means there was no viable option.
Yeah, exactly.
There was no viable alternative. It doesn't mean that they chose it by choice.
Yeah.
At this point in time, there is no easy HTML5, what you see is what you get program like Flash simply create Flash application.
Yeah.
Once that comes out, you will see people drop Flash like a hot potato. Because at the moment, to create an HTML5 thing, you have to hand code it. And not everybody knows HTML5. Yeah. But at the moment, they can go into Flash and they can just work on a timeline like it's a video editor. And the action scripting is all in a little pop-up so they can see exactly what it's very easy. I used to teach Flash. It's easy. You know. And once HTML5 comes of age, Flash is gone. I think he's wrong. I don't think in this situation, it's not about letting consumers decide. Because consumers will go with whatever is most prevalent.
Exactly.
A good case in point, Internet Explorer.
Yes.
It was not the best browser, and to this day is still not the best browser, but people all use it, and it's the most used browser. Why? Because it's right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's why they go with it. So, you can't just let the consumers decide. Exactly. It doesn't work that way.
Especially when it's computers, because there's still that large population of people that will just go, computers, I don't know. You tell me what to get. I don't know. And they just...
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no knowledge in what they're actually using.
Anyway, so we're having a heated war here, and I'm going to keep my eyes on this because I think whenever Jobs comes out with these statements, whenever he actually voices it personally, people jump on him. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very interesting to see where this
actually... Well, because they know that his voice is just that powerful. It's like if you don't quell that or come up with something to back it, people will just take that as word.
Yeah, and let's go back to last week's story. Apple is bigger than Microsoft. So it's,
I can't wait till it gets to the anthrax and letter bomb stage.
You'll start having these CEOs sending each other talcum powder in an envelope. Yeah. Like, ah, gotcha.
Or Dark Knight style, who just put an iPhone bomb inside some delivery guy.
Why is that iPhone beeping? Okay, moving on. The iPhone 4G leak that we talked about on Geek Actually Tech in the last episode of Geek Actually Tech, where what's his name? Justin Chin, was that his name? The Gizmodo editor, Chen. Anyway, what's his name? I forget what his first name is now. I'm trying to find it, but it doesn't
anyway.
Seem to be it. Anyway, but
just call him Mister.
Just call him Mister. All right, we'll call him Mister. Jason Chen. So Jason Chen, who I actually have a photo of, I think. Yes, here he is, Jason Chen.
Wow.
He's one of the editors at Gizmodo. He's the one that actually got the iPhone, dismantled it, you know, wrote up the articles and all that sort of stuff. We actually speculated on the Geek Actually Tech show what would happen now because, of course, the interesting event came up, which was you start saying, well, he actually received stolen goods. And so is this now a legal issue? Even though he's handed the phone back to Apple and everything, he paid $5,000 for something that did not belong to the person who sold it to him. So therefore, under American and Australian law, it's receiving stolen goods. Well, the police raided his house this week. They had a search warrant. They searched and seized and took everything from his house, including his iPad and everything else. And basically, yeah, they're investigating this as stolen property. There's a lot of talk about shield laws in America, which is journalistic shield laws, saying, is he protected?
Nick Fury's involved.
Not that shield. Not that shield. But they're saying, and There's a big question mark raised over this whole thing, which is because if he's not protected by journalistic shield laws, then what they're basically saying in a nutshell is... Well, he'll be taken to the cleaners for one, but what they're basically saying is that online journalists aren't real journalists, which is setting a very dangerous precedent.
Considering that... You know, the whole industry is saying that online is where it's
heading.
That's
right.
Print journalism is going to die.
Now, I don't condone what Gizmodo did because I actually think that the way they handled it was wrong. But I also blame Apple in a way because their whole belief system on security, their whole attitude on this has basically bred this kind of behavior. It's bred this, oh, we need to find out what it is. So Apple is as much fault to this as well. But I also sit there and I look at this and I go, he's been searched, he's been seized, etc. Why hasn't the guy who sold it to him been arrested? You know, he's the guy who actually found it, quote unquote. We'll use the term found loosely at this point because there is now talk as well on the scene that he may have stolen it. All right. Yeah. So,
but presumably, there'd have to be someone working at Apple that would have leaked it. And surely that's a bigger problem than a journalist.
Well, no, the Apple, basically, the story, if you go by the official story is one of the engineers had the prototype in his pocket. He went to his birthday party at a Hofbrauhaus type place and he dropped it. He left it by accident. And this guy found it and then sold it to Gizmodo for $5,000, saying, this is the prototype. There's more to the story. Go back to listen to Geek Actually Tech, and there is more to that story. But the point is that this is getting messy now. This is getting really ugly. And Josh and I actually speculated that it wasn't going to get – there was no legal action was going to take place until after the iPhone 4G was announced.
Oh, this still isn't legal. This is just
– search and seizure. It hasn't gone to court yet, though.
Yeah, but no, that's what I'm saying.
If
this is more –
warrant, though, that's –
A judge has signed a warrant.
That's the police doing the police thing. I'm not talking about this. Is not this is not Apple. This is not Apple coming down.
But did Apple report it though?
Oh no, I would imagine so. Yeah. But what I'm saying is they're not taking it to the courts yet.
You've been asked in the chat room to get a bit closer to your mic there, Ben.
Hello.
Just turn your mic a little bit towards your face there, and get a little bit closer. All right, so. Yes, no, it's going to get messier before it gets better. The reason why we actually speculated that this was not going to go to court until after the release was because, of course, as soon as it goes to court, all court records are public, which means that the iPhone 4G becomes public by default. And I didn't think Apple would want to do that. But there is actually an extension of this story, which was actually further down the line, but we'll bring it up right now, which is Apple has announced the date for the WWDC, which is where they normally release or announce the next iPhone. And we were getting worried that this was seemed to be delayed and delayed and delayed. Well, it looks like it's now been set for June 7th. So look for the new iPhone June 7th at the keynote. That would be the speculation at this point. All right, so we can drop that news story out right there. Now, for you, Josh.
Yes.
Actually, Ben, you're a gamer too, so for you as well.
Oh, I thought we were going to the story after that.
No. We'll get to that one in just a minute. For you, Josh, another story after that's for Dave, but he's not here. But for you, Josh... we have been promoting on all of our shows, and now I guess we can stop because it's over. But PALGN's and retail store game and their petition that they've been having people sign for the last few weeks to, leading up to the Attorney General's conference has now come out, and it's been submitted. And for those people out there who actually want to say that the tech community or the geeks really aren't the big issue, and of course it's all about the environment, it's all about this or it's all about that, well, guess what? The R rating actually garnered 89,000 signatures, which is actually more signatures than were against work choices, which only actually got 85,000 signatures. So it is now a hot topic item, and it's actually big, big news, which also leads me to believe that they can get that motivated for that, get motivated for the internet censorship filter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's because they're dropping stuff now for this election coming up. They've dropped the ETS. As an issue, which means they're going to be focusing heavily on other factors, and you know,
they're
going to
be looking at what is a good election.
Yeah, they're going to be right on top of this, and they're going to be. And I think technology is suddenly they have underestimated how important technology is to a lot of people. So I'm really keen on that. I'm really, really happy. Now, the May 7th is the date where the Attorney Generals will meet in Melbourne, and it is on the table. So hopefully after May 7th, we'll at least have a yay or nay as to whether or not it's a viable thing, rather than just a big no, which is what it has been up until.
But at the same time, like, I have to say, you know, kudos to them for, you know, getting this much
effort. Absolutely.
Like, we've been pushing this hard over the last few weeks.
Yeah, they had a lot more submissions to the discussion paper than they expected. And then to have 89,000 signatures on a petition on top of that, it's sending a message.
It's And it's a good sequence of events, too. I mean, if Atkinson was still in the picture, I mean,
he would have come back.
This
with
wouldn't
something
be anywhere near as significant as it is now.
Just look at the chat room. Snake Oz has said they've underestimated the geeks. We shall rule the world. And I am Ozface has said geek power. You know, it's like absolutely. So yeah, no, I think that's very good. Now, speaking of geeks, I am Ozface. This one is for you, and it is for Dave. Dave kept trying to tell us that there are no female geeks. He actually said this quite openly. I think it was episode 2 of Platforms.
Did he have that little smile he has on his face?
Of course he did. And we actually had a couple of girls in the room as well, in the chat room as well, when he said it. So he was joking, of course. But some stats have come out on this, and I just thought I'd bring up this little graphic which I found online, which talk nerdy to me. But basically it says here, if you want news.com.au reported, that it says the fairer sex controls, and it's incredibly sexist that they actually said the fairer sex to start with. But anyway,
never understood that because, like, tell you what, like, girlfriends can be pretty tough sometimes. There's no fairness in that.
We've had Felix712 in the chat room say, I want that shirt. Talk nerdy to me. All right, so it says the fairer sex controls 78% of household spending, makes up almost half of the video gaming population.
Yeah.
46% is the female video gamers. It is responsible for buying or choosing most gadgets, from computers to televisions. Women really dominate in the field of digital photography as well, with females between 25 and 40 taking more photos than any other group. So, female geeks, power to you, girls.
That's it. The two stats that I always throw at people who try to challenge, you know, have that sort of 90s attitude to video games, I say, look, like, 46% of gamers girls, and the average age of a gamer is 28.
Yeah.
Actually, it's higher than that now. The last stat I said actually said it was like 31 to 36. So probably it's because all the gamers from back in the 80s are getting older. You know, it's like, anyway. So, yeah, I thought that was fantastic. The source of this, by the way, comes from Gadget Girl blog, and I think that's fantastic to know. I think it is really good to see that. But now all we need to do is get more women on this show.
Yeah.
More empowerment.
I can wear a dress.
Sorry?
I can wear a dress, but I'm not losing the beard.
That's not going to work.
It's not going to work for me at all.
No, that's not going to work for me at all. All right, so speaking of female geeks, Jennifer McCreet, who is self-described as geeky, perverted, atheist, feminist.
Nice. she's just a whole bunch of stuff.
Isn't she wonderful? She basically got absolutely offended by an Iranian cleric who I'm not even going to attempt to try and pronounce his name, which, let me tell you, it is really, it's just a jumble of letters as far as I can see.
Still consonants.
An Iranian cleric who actually preached his exact words. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Many women who do not dress modestly led young men astray, corrupting their chastity and spread adultery in society, which consequently increases earthquakes.
I have no problem with that. That's true.
I love that he's going along until he hits the earthquake lady to go, huh?
Yeah, like at least he's basing one thing on the other thing right up until that point where everything just kind of falls apart in the conversation. Like,
damn straight.
Earthquakes.
So Jennifer McCreet took it upon herself to create the official boobquake page. And she basically said, come on, girls, let's prove that our cleavages do not cause earthquakes. She managed to rally 55,000 people on her site, and Monday was officially boobquake day, where they basically, everybody basically wore skimpy clothing, lots of cleavage, and basically all around the world to prove that just doing this was not going to cause an earthquake.
I did feel a little tremor.
She's just amazing.
In our support for boobquake.
Yes.
Hang on. Whoa.
Whoa.
Stop
now,
shaking.
Unfortunately, it kind of went astray because at the day on boobquake day, there was actually a 6.5 magnitude quake.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, wasn't there one in Australia? There was an earthquake in Australia early in the...
However, they actually go on to say, statistically speaking, that is actually not relevant. Because apparently, in any given day, there's probably a 6.5 earthquake all around the world. What would have been statistically relevant had they had many or multitudes of earthquakes around the world, basically. And so that quake in Taiwan was statistically irrelevant.
It's still funny as hell, though.
It's still funny as hell.
Would you feel mildly responsible for that? Would you?
I'm sure she didn't, because she's an atheist, sex maniac, geek, whatever it is she is.
What other sort of national disasters can we blame on stuff? Do you think maybe?
No, I think boobquake,
the global financial crisis was blamed on male premature ejaculation.
I think boobquake is perfect, but I think she didn't go far enough. Mm. I'm calling all geek women out there. I think we need to have Boobquake Week.
You would love that.
I would.
You, Dave?
I'm calling for Boobquake Week, and I think all and I think, you know what? I'm not even averse to saying it should be skimpy clothing all around. Even the guys.
Why week? What about boob timber?
Boob timber! Absolutely!
Or Norgus.
Norgus,
that works. It's closer, too.
All right. And we've got I'm also saying an earthquake in my pants. All right. Yes. No. I think we should. I've joined her page on Facebook. I think we should all get in there, and we should really encourage her to spread the love and make this a longer.
I'm not going to complain about this.
A lot longer event.
But when you think about it, it's a win-win for men, because on one hand, by supporting it, they're going, yeah, we're pro women's rights, because we're sticking
and
it
to this guy.
At
the same time, we get to look at cleavages.
And then it's like, boobs, yeah.
Boobs. <Win-win>. Boobies. Gotta love boobies. All right. We're going to talk very quickly, and then we're going to move on here. We're going to talk very quickly about how an internet meme gets started.
Oh, yes.
Because I think this is absolutely brilliant. All right. Now, according to an article that was in the Sydney Morning Herald, a Facebook page went up called Kate's Birthday Party. It was billed as a small gathering of friends in an apartment, but crucially, they didn't close the event. It was open to anybody, which was a mistake on their behalf, okay? Now, a Twitter post went out, and we'll get back to the events of the people who were involved in this, but basically a Twitter post went out that said, yay, Kate's having a party in her small apartment. Hit attending and give the host an aneurysm. Well, what happened was, it was created Saturday. It gained 5,000 attendees in 10 minutes, growing to 60,000 attendees overnight. And by the time the group was finally shut down by Facebook, there were a further 180,000 people who had been invited but not yet confirmed to this party. Over 500 related Facebook groups sprung up around the party, and I love some of these names. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Who needs a ride to Kate's party? Which turban should I wear to Katie's?
What?
I hope there's more than one toilet in Kate's apartment. I have enough cheese and crackers for 8 people. Do you think that's enough for Kate's? Flight QF785 to Kate's party. Kate's after party. And it's actually a surprise party. Don't tell Kate. Also, it went on to say that katiesparty.com and a fresh Twitter feed actually got created for this event. Now, apparently, shortly after the numbers started to grow, the text on the actual Kate's Party page changed to WTF? Who are you people? Why are there 10,000 people who have been invited? This is a private party in our apartment. And it turns out the entire thing was a hoax.
Oh,
all right, brilliant. So it goes on, and it says that it was actually created by a popular prankster who comes from 27b/6.com, who came clean and basically said he created it to as an experiment to see what would happen, and he was the one who tweeted it out. So he created the page, then tweeted out that tweet just to see what would happen. Yeah. And wow, that's how you create a meme.
Yeah.
All right. So that's
I'll be using that one for years to come.
That's how memes are born.
It's like my nightmare. I mean, I've had closed events with people I don't want to come turn up, you know?
Hey, Ben, so are you coming to Kate's party?
Let's go to Kate's party. I think we should put a post up on gigactually.com.
Yeah, I don't really like Kate.
She's a bit of a
I'm just going to watch a movie at home.
She's downstairs, man. Watch yourself. All right, let's move into film and television. And I just want to say really quickly, straight off the bat, that we're going to start off with a trailer. And I apologize straight off for this trailer.
I was just grabbing my hat to throw up into.
And here it is.
Don't do this, Jerry, please.
Don't do this! No!
This mark will remind you of the man who took everything you had. No! After that night, some say he was a changed man. That his spirit crossed over, giving him powers that can't be explained.
Jonah Hex.
Love coffins.
Thinking you might need a...
Cut him down!
Jonah Hex.
You don't look so tough.
Hey, Hex! What happened to your face?
Cut myself shaving. What happened to yours?
Always do lock when you finally show up.
Jeez, woman, how many men you see in a day?
Quentin Turnbull is...
Don't you dare say that name to me.
Quentin Turnbull surfaced about a month ago.
We want Turnbull dead.
Why don't you just say that to begin with? Anything new, Smith?
Thought you'd never ask. But take it that means you approve.
This is the future.
Future's bright. Can you shoot?
Can you?
This war begins right here! I own you now!
Not you much for being owned.
Turnbull! We ain't near settled our score.
What's it like to go through life with a face like that?
I'll show you. Got that knife in your garter?
I took it.
Still got that derringer in your bustle?
They took it all, Jonah.
Well, searched you for it darn good, didn't they?
Wouldn't you?
Okay. Oh, now, let me just state for the record that I actually used to read Jonah Hex comic books back in the 80s, and I actually quite liked Jonah Hex. He was a really irreverent character, and he was really brutal, and he was kind of like, I guess you would probably even go so far as to say, without the humor, the kind of the Deadpool of his day. He was a no-fuck-around character, you know? They've captured the look perfectly. Now, you have to ask yourself, though, with a trailer like this, this film is 3 months out of 3 months off release, and this is the first time we've actually seen a trailer for it. That's a concern. Yeah. That means that they did not know how to promote this film. It was in trouble. They didn't know what to do with it, and now we finally get a trailer 3 months off release.
You know what I love more than anything, Dave?
What do you love more than anything?
I love just like sort of period, westerns or anything like that or medieval stuff to a rock soundtrack.
Doesn't
it work just so well? Like, didn't we just nail it on the head with Clash of the Titans? And just from now on, it's just gonna
course it all started with Knight's Tale as well. Which
yeah,
was another
remember.
One. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, if not one
classic,
of my not one of my favorite things.
That,
And Megan Fox.
No, No, I don't care. I don't care. Honestly, like, I mean, the bit that I was hoping for that film, I hung on to the fact that it was just going to be good enough as Jonah Hex as a character that I would go see it. But it really wasn't. Like, everything in that trailer kills me. I am so sick to death of John Malkovich. I wish he would go die.
I'm so over him.
Really, but he's kind of got that Mark Wahlberg factor, though, hasn't he?
Where, I'm over him, too.
No, that's what I mean.
Thank you. Not a good example.
That's the point, though. Like, where you're over him, but he's kind of funny to watch in a film.
No, he's really not.
Because you're so used to them doing the same thing every movie that you can at least go,
he's doing
that voice again. You know how Malkovich does that thing where he kind of talks really slowly with Brandon
Paul. Yeah, that's why I'm over him, because he's always the same.
Oh, but that amuses the hell out of me.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't amuse me at all. And you know what?
He obviously amuses somebody because they keep hiring the guy.
Dude, you know what I couldn't stop thinking? When he delivers those lines outside the building, you know, when he's being killed, all I could think of, and I don't even know the relation, I can't correlate it in my mind, but was Ghost Rider. Like, the terrible dialogue delivery.
It feels like Ghost Rider.
You know what else it is? It's that... The whole point of it's a Western, and they've made it Western in costume.
In fact, Jonah Hex was kind of DC's Ghost Rider. This is kind of very similar. Yeah.
But it's that Hollywood thing of they don't know how to nab the tone. They go, let's dress it so it looks like this, but it'll feel like, a completely different movie.
Agreed.
It'll feel like just a stock standard action movie. It won't feel like a
Western.
And
this is going to sound incredibly sexist,
but the things that you need.
I know, Josh, you've already answered him, but I'm going to bring it up. Rob, welcome to our chat room, by the way. This is Rob from Real Junkies. And from the Real Junkies podcast, which everybody should also go out and have a listen to. But Rob, I have to agree with you. It says Megan Fox is where she belongs, on her back, which is a really callous thing to say. But I got to tell you, I'm just waiting for the Megan Fox porn film. Because I don't like her as an actress. Mm. I think she looks good. She's sexy, but I don't care about her as an actress. Go do porn or something. You know, really, get out of mainstream cinema. You're not cutting it.
It's like Paris Hilton when she did that porn tape, and I was like, I got more respect because I thought, well, you know what? At least now you're actually doing something.
At least she's famous for something.
There's a reason for us to know your name now.
So an incredibly sexist thing to say. I know, and I do apologize in advance. But really, I'm so over Megan Fox.
You should. Pay tribute to Boobquake right now.
Hold on. Paying tribute to Boobquake.
There we go. Everything.
You know what, dude?
And not sexist at all,
dude. No. All I can say about this film is that you've got the writers that one of the writers did freaking Gamer and Crank. This is not a good place to start.
No. Okay, look, Gamer and Crank were not big for their writing.
No.
They were big for visuals, but not for
the other
writing.
Thing about that too is it's got that Wild Wild West thing about it, where they say it's gonna be you know, sort of a fun Western movie, but then it's like, oh, here's a ridiculous, you know, double minigun type and
fucking on a horse, which just would not work.
The horse would be like,
it's Wild Wild West mixed. It's Wild Wild West slash Ghost Rider slash Constantine, but no, Constantine was good though.
But not in terms of difference of Constantine movie with Constantine comics.
True.
It's like a pale...
And the saddest part of all of this, though, is that Josh Brolin is actually Jonah
Hex. Dude, that line in the thing where that guy says something to him and he shoots him... he just does that one bullet, and he just cut himself shaving, what happened to yours... That is just like, when I see that, I'm like, God damn it, there are redeeming qualities to just this film.
It's like Punisher Warzone all over again, though, where you go, oh, he is... The Punisher, but then there's nothing else about that film that makes it. And you think, oh, you've wasted such a good cast. You know,
Snake Oz in the chat room has said, horse-mounted twin Gatling guns better be an unlock in Red Dead Redemption.
I bloody well hope so, man.
And it's the other thing to consider. By the time that that movie comes out, like, the whole gaming community will be well and truly into Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
And they're going to go, that's not a Western.
Prediction, Jonah Hex will sink and disappear before it even opens. This is not looking good.
No,
it's not looking good.
Which I kind of feel bad for Josh Brolin, though, because I do think...
I don't think this is going to hurt him.
No, it won't hurt
honestly,
him.
Honestly, because like, when I look at when
I
look
he deserves
at it...
To, but what was the last thing he did? W.
Yeah. I mean, he's done other stuff, but W, I mean, he's still... W is not actually a great film either, but he was fantastic.
He was fantastic. Yeah. And then on top of that, like, I mean, the persona that I can feel out of that is his persona from No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
Like, that's the same kind of feeling you get from
there's also shades of Planet... Grindhouse.
Planet Terror.
Planet Terror. With his doctor. which I thought he I thought he was one of the best things in that film. I thought he was brilliant. As that, that fucking, when he's got the girl against the wall, it's just evil. I love Josh Brolin, and I think he is growing in. He's grown into what he is. When he first started out, I didn't like him, but he's growing into this very, very good character actor who can do stuff like this really well. He's not picking the right films.
One person was saying to me the other day that they would cast Josh Brolin as Wolverine if they ever and as a Wolverine fan, I was kind of, you know, I'm still undecided, but I thought it was
It just occurs to me though, if they're going to push ahead, if they are really going to do this, I'd cast him as Snake Plissken.
Oh, dude, definitely. Yes.
That is it.
Yes.
He's got the Kurt Russell
It just occurred to me, I would put him in that costume and I would send him into New York.
And that would be the closest I would get to a new Kurt Russell. That
absolutely.
Would be
I think Josh Brolin should be cast as Snake Plissken in the Escape from New York.
Let's find somebody
if they're
going to
push ahead with this thing,
drop that bomb
at least do it good. You know? At least get the right person in the role, and I think that's the go.
Dang, that's good casting.
And Kurt Russell should play the Lee Van Cleef character.
But who's going to play the Donald Pleasance "We're All Going to Die" character?
Good question.
We don't have one of those.
We'll come back to that.
Knowing Hollywood and
Megan Fox with
Seriously, if I know anything about Hollywood and I know how terrible remakes go, who they're going to cast is Anthony Anderson.
That's it. I'm done. But you know what I would do? I would also cast Jeff Goldblum as Brain. All right, so there you go. All right, and knowing Hollywood, though, they'll put Megan Fox as the Adrian Barbeau character. Yeah. So, anyway.
Speaking of remakes,
have a look at this.
Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Major. You did.
I lied.
Okay.
Oh, God, man, that is awesome.
Now, the reason we bring that up, of course, is that Training Day screenwriter David Ayer has been signed to direct I think it's his directorial debut, actually. He's been hired to direct the remake of Commando, originally directed by Mark L. Lester and starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. What do we think of the remake of Commando? 1, 2, 3. No. Look, Commando was not a great film. It was an Arnie film.
Oh, dude, yeah, absolutely.
You take Arnie out of Commando, there is no film.
Dude, you can put any person in that role and it won't work. Like, I mean, you could try for the new school version. You could even put someone like The Rock in it. No one's going to work.
No. Leave
it
alone.
Arnie because Arnie is a particular type of
person.
What
struck me is that, like, in that article, if you look at, you know, when he outlines the basic plot. So what is it? Sort of Black Ops, Marine, Commando type guy.
Yeah.
What is it? Has to get his daughter back.
Has to go get his daughter who's been kidnapped by the drug lords. Okay, we've just described 50% of action films.
And then the writer is saying, I want to take this in a different direction. We don't need Hulky. We can have a more stealthy, tactic, you know,
Black Ops
person. And it's like, great, that's cool. You can do that. It doesn't make it original. It's the same as so many movies we've seen before. I just want to get my kids back.
It's also not Commando.
Bang.
But the whole point is, Commando was this walking tank basically went in and killed everything in sight. If you're going to go stealthy and everything, you're making Splinter Cell the movie. You know?
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. You might as well just make your own film.
You know who they should cast? John Cena. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be the new school version of that.
Josh.
I'm pulling out the big guns today.
I will kill you.
I'll kill myself, dude. Don't worry. I got that shit covered.
Speaking of remakes, we also need to go on and say that my absolute respect goes out to the director of the Nightmare on Elm Street remake,
props,
Samuel Bayer. Because in this age where all the producers are basically saying, oh, look, 3D is so popular, let's put our release date by back a week and do a rush job and 3D convert everything.
Yeah.
New Line actually did talk to him about converting Nightmare on Elm Street 3D, and he said no. He says this was shot in 2D and was meant to be shown in 2D. And he goes, and just like I don't want to see a lot of great movies remade, alluding to the other Hollywood vogue, I don't want to see a lot of them in 3D. And
damn
I thought,
right.
Damn right. And the only reason he can get away with this, of course, is because he's got the cloud of Michael Bay behind him.
Yeah.
So, for the first time, words are going to come out of my mouth that I did not know actually existed in a combination together, which is, I'm proud of Platinum Dunes.
Yeah. No, you know? I have to say that it's the one step in the right direction they've actually taken.
So. Absolutely. And all I can say is now what we need is a lot more producers to start standing up to this push. Because do you know what? They're going to kill 3D before it gets a chance to start by releasing a lot of mediocre 3D shit.
Yeah.
And people go, I don't want to watch 3D. You know, we need to shoot stuff in 3D. It needs to be made for 3D, prepared in 3D, and the other stuff can stay 2D. It doesn't have to
Robin,
be made.
Robin Hood's converted, isn't it? Is that still converted? Did they go ahead?
No,
that?
I don't think they converted Robin Hood.
Oh, good. Because that was going to be the test for me, because there was that period where they were talking about upscaling it, but then it was kind of like they were going to hold off and see how.
I haven't seen any trailers.
Clash of the Titans went.
And I haven't seen any trailers for it to be in 3D, so I don't think they did it in 3D. Ridley Scott has said
they were talking about it, but then I think they were going to wait and see.
Ridley Scott has said though that he is shooting the Alien prequel in 3D. Mm.
Prequels. He's doing
prequels.
He's doing
it's still in debate. It's an idea that he has. We'll find out.
He has a lot of crazy ideas.
He has a lot of wild and wacky ideas. You know, all I could say to him is pick a film. You know, I mean, in the last year, we've heard announcements of Ridley Scott saying, my next film will be Brave New World. My next film will be the Alien prequel.
Like
my next film will be this other science fiction thing. It's like, pick one.
It's like Tim Burton has about like
all
five
together
projects
at the same time.
Yeah.
Just have them with three different sets running at the same time. He just walks between them. No, do that. Okay, next one.
Just, his directing style will be, no, yes, no,
he just
yes,
sits
no,
in one
no,
room
yes.
with like 10 TVs.
Just he just locks himself in a room,
action,
growing
cut,
a giant
action,
beard.
That reminds me of an anecdote. I like to throw in anecdotes every now and then. Did you guys ever hear about the anecdote of Francis Ford Coppola and, what's her name? Give me a second. Kathleen Turner. When Peggy Sue Got Married was being made in the 80s, Francis Ford Coppola is a huge tech head. And he basically, at one point, was going through a stage where he was directing all of his films from what they called the Silverfish. It was this huge silver trailer that he had custom made, and it had video feeds and monitors and, you know, consoles and all this sort of stuff all through it. And basically, he directed the movies. That was like his home base. And so they'd have the set out there, and he was monitoring everything through the monitors and issuing the instructions through microphones and all this sort of stuff. And when he was meant to direct Peggy Sue Got Married, he went to Kathleen Turner and said, now, he goes, you won't mind if I direct from the Silverfish? And she goes, no, absolutely not, if you don't mind if I act from my trailer. So at that point, they had a new understanding for each other, and the film went
that's
on.
Funny.
But it's true. I mean, you can't just hide in a trailer up the back, you know? Anyway, but that's what it's coming to. Anyway,
it's like Big Brother acting. Then you just hear this disembodied voice, move to the left.
I'm watching you. It kind of comes to the George Lucas School of Drama. I didn't say that. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Moving right along. Oh, actually, moving right along. Do we have a trailer at this point?
Yep.
Yep, we have a trailer. Cool. All right. Now, this is apparently, they have said this is the final trailer for this film. It comes out soon. So, and I got to say, the most important thing about this trailer, the thing that got me most about this in Digital Angel in our chat room, here you go. It finally shows Appa, which is the thing that was lacking in all the other trailers, which Appa is the flying bison that they fly
on.
Yeah,
in the very beginning.
And so we finally have Appa. All right, so here's The Last Airbender.
That and action in general.
watch for the sequence where he freezes the guy in ice.
As he jumps over him. Oh, it's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The choreography is not this film's problem.
The power to control the elements is bestowed upon a chosen few. The Fire Nation has declared war. But some believe there is still hope.
I always knew you'd return. You are the only one who can control all the elements and bring peace to our world.
I will stop them.
You may already be too late.
I will not live in peace until I find him.
Reasons each of us are born. We have to find those reasons.
It has begun.
And that's the kicker at the end. The kicker at the end is the in 3D.
Is it filmed in 3D or are they...
No, converted. But they've taken their time on it. And according to the article that this came from, it actually says that they have actually been planning it for to be in 3D for some time. And so at least it's not going to be a Clash of the Titans rush job. They have been converting it as they've been
going. My biggest problem after watching that trailer is I still think it's going to completely fail in where M. Night Shyamalan always fails. And it's like, it is a linchpin for films. You know, you can put as much visual stuff on screen as you want. But if you fuck dialogue, you fuck the movie.
Yeah.
And that dialogue is just awful.
Yeah. Writing every actors, line. That's what's going to...
Every
gonna
line
be.
In that film that is spoken in that trailer, I was just sitting there going,
and
oh,
you know what?
Really?
I can even go with the writing and say you could make those lines work. The problem that I feel is I think his casting is all wrong.
Yeah.
And I think his casting is wrong, and I don't think those kids know how to deliver. In fact, the kid who's playing Aang is just flat.
Yeah. Mm.
But visually, it looks really spectacular. The other thing that I will say about this film is it's still missing one vital component, and that's just to the Avatar world. Now, those who have not seen the cartoon, it is really funny. They have completely stripped all the humor out of it. Now, I wouldn't want them to go as broad as the cartoon does because it wouldn't work as well for the film, but it still needs humor. And in fact, Sokka is a very funny character, and they've just stripped every strip of humor out of it. So I'm worried about that side of it because that's part of the charm of Avatar was it's, and we keep saying Avatar because the cartoon, of course, is called Avatar The Last Airbender. They had to drop the Avatar for James Cameron, which also kind of sucks, quite frankly. But look, I am going to go see it. I am curious. I'm a huge fan of the cartoon, and I think what we should do is one day we should catch Joshua because I don't think Joshua's actually seen a lot of the cartoon.
I've seen some of it, but not all of
seen,
it.
I haven't seen
it. I've got all three seasons. Anyway. We really need to sit you guys down and watch it, and we should do it in an after show. We should talk about it because it is a really, really great cartoon.
I think that is going to be one film that I just don't see 3D for. I think after Clash of the Titans, I think I'm just going to see that in 2D.
Some of the bending would look nice in 3D if it was shot for it.
I think I'd rather, if I like it in 2D, I'd then rather dip in again to see it in 3D.
Yeah, but, no, I think I'll definitely go see it in 2D. I'm not playing. I'm not seeing any more upconverted films in 3D. I'm going to go see things
really
that were shot in 3D.
I really had to motivate myself just to see the 3D version of Clash of the Titans. I was
I had to see
Josh
that.
Josh and I had a kind of discussion about whether one of us sees it in 3D or I'm destroying the studio, or one of us sees it in 2D or...
And look, I saw Clash of the Titans in 3D on purpose because I needed to see how bad it was going to be. I actually want to see Clash of the Titans again in 2D. I'm waiting for it, but I'm not going to see it at the cinema. I want to see it on Blu-ray or something like that. I'll get it out and I'll have a look at it again because I'd like to see it without being distracted by the fucking visuals, you know, because the visuals were just awful. I mean, it was just...
I don't think it's going to save it, Dave. But
I don't either. I don't either, but I will watch
it. Off halfway through.
Yeah, I spent like half the movie watching it. It's it's not in 3D, so I mean, like, I don't understand why you would even need to. But again, you know,
I'll have a look at it. I will have a look at it when it comes out on Blu-ray and give it its fair shake because it wasn't fair to the film. I mean, it wasn't fair to the film in general what they did to it. You know, even if it wasn't a great film, it wasn't fair to it to butchered it.
There's a great video on YouTube that you'd like, Dave, which is the trailer for the original Clash of the Titans with the music from the Louis Leterrier put over it.
Gotta see it.
It's really funny.
Gotta see it.
They've even got the bump, 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 bump in sync with, you know.
Speaking of Clash of the Titans,
let's
come on to this and basically say that Louis Leterrier and Eric Brevig are the directors of Clash of the Titans and Journey to the Center of the Earth. Now, Journey to the Center of the Earth, I have to say, was actually better than I expected it to be, or better than it deserved to be, actually, quite frankly.
Brendan Fraser.
Wasn't a great film, but it was fun, and I didn't go see it at the cinema because I really had heard nothing but bad things about it. When I finally saw it on DVD, it's like, actually not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but still not fantastic. But both of these films are getting sequels. It is now being said that we haven't got directors signed to these yet, but they're basically saying that they both did good enough business that they are going to be picked up, but neither of the original directors are coming back.
Which could be a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, Louis Leterrier actually says, I've done the sword and sandals thing, now time to move on. You know, so he's... I do respect the man. Look, he's really... He does what he wants to do, and he moves on. And I kind of respect that. He doesn't seem like he's there just for a cash grab. He's doing stuff because it interests him, you know?
And well, then when who he's knows? Well, I'll at least, like, if Clash of the Titans had a different director with a different angle. I don't know. The world itself wasn't my problem with that film.
I just think Clash of the Titans doesn't need a sequel. It's
I just don't
move on.
What is it? Just going to be Perseus's fishing adventures? That's where it ended with him. Remember?
It was his
no.
Sex
basically,
doll.
Dude. No, that's the problem. The sex doll gets stolen, so he's got to go cross country to get it back.
Dude, where's my sex doll?
There you go. He has to go find his sex doll. Okay, this is the story we've been waiting for, guys. Actually, before we do this story, because this is probably going to take us straight into our film review, let's just do very quickly. A study came out, Bloomberg Businessweek reported. This just made me laugh. We always talk about, you know, there's no correlation between violence and games and blah. Well, there's a study that's done in the States, and I got to say at this point that I think this is horse shit, but we'll say it anyway. Apparently, they're now saying that watching R-rated movies, which in our case would be the equivalent of MA-rated movies, leads to alcoholism.
Alcoholism?
Yeah.
So not just alcohol.
Well, early alcohol use, which of course will lead to alcoholism. So you just look at it and go, really? Really? Is this... Well, what science is involved here?
I think I point you to the science of Alien vs. Predator 1 and 2. I hit the turf pretty hard after that.
It says they questioned nearly 3,600 middle school children in New England and followed up about 2 years later. In that time, 3% of the kids who said their parents never allowed them to watch R-rated movies said that they had started drinking alcohol, compared to the 19% of those who were sometimes allowed to watch R-rated movies, and 25% of those who said they were allowed to watch such movies all the time.
Okay, so what about the percentage of kids that watched them even though their parents didn't let them?
Well, exactly. How many of these kids were sneaking
into the movies?
Were
those kids alcoholics, or did they move on to hard drugs? Did we go straight to A-class?
It says here, research today suggests that keeping kids from R-rated movies can help keep them from drinking, smoking, and doing a lot of other things that parents don't want them to do. Oh, I guess that means fucking. But, you know, anyway, so
well, call it what you will.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
That's awesome.
That's awesome study. That is just the science at work. What can I tell
you? And really, it's just who sat down and went, I bet that watching R18 movies leads to boozing.
Absolutely.
I think you'll find that not only does it lead to alcoholism, but it's also responsible for tornadoes.
So nice. Everybody should get drunk tonight
exactly.
to prove that it doesn't create tornadoes.
I'm in.
Look, Dave, it's Saturday and we're you know, Randwick and Coogee. You don't need to tell people to get drunk.
Alright, Digital Angel's going, what the fuck?
Don't try and think about it, it'll make your head explode.
Don't hurt. Okay, it's come to that time.
Two words, real junkies.
It's come to the yes, Rob. It's come to that time where we have to talk about Twilight.
No, I'm sorry. For the first time ever, I'm excited about
Twilight.
Man,
I gotta tell you,
I am in with a grin with this one, man.
I am going to put up with all the Twilight movies and all the Twilight crap just to get to this movie. Yeah. All right, Breaking Dawn has
dude,
gone.
You know what? I'm going to wait, and when I see that film, I'm actually going to run up to the front of the cinema and just stare backwards, just to watch the thousands of mind-broken Twilight fans. I'll just be sitting there going, yes!
The chat room has gone berserk.
You didn't know it was coming, but it was.
No, because everyone else in the cinema will be doing the same thing.
Wait. The chat room has gone berserk. We've got Snake Oz hits Dave M. You mean it's nap time from Octane? Wait. Before
dude,
you judge this.
Yes, but I've got one extra thing. We are going to two screenings of this film. One where we will actually review the film, but the first one that we're going to go see is you, me, Ben, and everyone else that I can drag along to this are going to get tickets and actually wander right to the front of the cinema, sit down, and actually have popcorn and everything like that ready and waiting. Just so we can go, dude, this is going to be awesome.
Look, I am so waiting for this. All right, now we've teased this enough. Let's actually talk about what's happening. The fourth Twilight book, Breaking Dawn, is the one Twilight book that Twilight fans don't like. All right, this is the book
which
where
means there's going to be something good.
That's
in
right.
It.
Basically, it went out of its mind. All right, and the little Mormon woman Stephanie Meyer, who wrote it, basically kind of lost it at this point. And a lot of studios actually said that this was probably the one they weren't going to make as a film. They were going to end on Eclipse. Well, no, Summit has decided to go ahead. They are going to make it. In fact, they might even make it as two movies, they said. All right. Bill Condon, the director of Gods and Monsters and Dreamgirls, has been
it's
signed.
Such a strange choice.
Strange choice. He's been signed to direct it.
I think it works, though.
Gods and Monsters, yes. Showgirls, not.
I mean, if you just look at
Gods and Monsters, yes. Showgirls, not. So, you know, it's
But
he's an interesting director, anyway.
If you just look at the path of directors from Twilight through New Moon, it just kind of gets stranger.
Now, I have not read it, and my first thought was Breaking Dawn, you know, why? It's just another Twilight film. chud.com.
Oh, yeah. God, I love these guys.
I love this. This is actually written by Devin Faraci, who is one of my,
like, gods.
One of the gods over at Chud as well. He wrote this beautiful article, and the article is actually titled The Devil's Advocate, Why Breaking Dawn Must Be Made into a Movie. All right, and I'm going to quote you some stuff out of here. For those who think that Twilight has no redeeming features, all right? This is for you guys, all right? Now, this text is very small, and I've highlighted it, so we'll see what we can do our best here. Basically, he says, though, this is the plot. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Breaking Dawn opens with Bella Swan, the heroine of the series, finally getting married to Edward Cullen, the mopey vampire hero. They go off to honeymoon on Isle Esme, a Brazilian island the Cullen clan owns. And as he points out here, this is already a bizarre concept of Edward going snorkeling. All right. Yeah. All right. So, we get to that point. He then goes on to say, they go snorkeling, and this does happen in the book. He goes snorkeling. Okay. So, all right, anyway.
Sparkle snorkeling.
Sparkle snorkeling. All right. Now it says here that Edward is afraid to fuck his new bride. The reason, he's super strong and she's just a human. Man of Steel, Woman of Kleenex type of situation here. I'm quoting him directly here. He says, but Bella wears him down and Edward throws it in her and knocks her the fuck out, leaving her body badly bruised. Whoa. Now he goes, let's say this again. Edward fucks Bella into unconsciousness.
Which is pretty impressive because she was already unconscious enough. For the
She's
first
already
three.
Walking unconscious. All right, now hold on. This gets better. All right. Despite being knocked out cold by his sexual style, and having the headboard destroyed, Bella goes back to Edward for seconds. This time, he knocks her up. Yes, an undead vampire. Now this made me laugh in the pre-show when I was getting this started. So just bear with me. Yes, an undead vampire apparently has enough viable sperm to impregnate a human woman while fucking her off the coast of Rio de Janeiro. Stephanie Meyer, you fabulous idiot. Oh, man. All right. Now, the baby in Bella's belly starts growing incredibly fast. Devin, I love you, man. Come on my show. The baby in Bella's belly starts growing incredibly fast, and it starts hurting Bella, as each kick it gives has super strength of the vampire behind it. As it grows, Bella gets sicker, and then the good stuff starts. The baby kicks so hard it breaks Bella's ribs and severs her spine.
We should laugh at that, but that's just so stupid.
He says, are you imagining Kristen Stewart wearing a fake pregnancy belly and pretending to be suddenly crippled by her own fetus?
I'm just picturing the meal scene in Alien now.
Okay, now we go on because it says here, wait, I missed something. It says Edward is completely freaked out about the baby, fearing it will kill Bella. He also tries to convince her to get an abortion. But seriously, how could she? It's already undead.
You abort something that isn't alive.
It says, It says it's tougher to kill than to shoot. It says Native American wolf boy Jacob tries to impregnate his wife so that she can have the baby she desperately wants. Eventually the baby starts to get born. This is it. This is the part that we're waiting for. I want to see this on screen. Are you ready? The baby has telepathy, by the way, so everybody can read its thoughts while it's in the womb, and it turns out to have an essentially adult mind. Copy June much? It should be noted that Stephanie Meyer we might think that she's ripped off Frank Herbert, but of course, she probably has never read.
Read much, Dave?
Yeah, I don't think she's read much. Anyway, it goes on and says, now it says, in a moment that demands, and this is his words, it says, in a moment that demands to be shown on the silver screen, and this is why we will all go see Breaking Dawn, Edward gives Bella an emergency C-section with his fucking teeth. I think we have just put Josh in a catatonic state.
and
I just wow.
Now, chat room, was I right? Are we all going to go see this now?
I am so going to.
All right, now, last but not least, and I think this is the most important part here, and I have to keep taking my glasses off because this text is so goddamn small. It says here, once the baby is out, it says Bella gets vamped by Edward to save her life because, of course, she's been spine broken and everything else going on. So she gets vamped out because she's about to die. And probably the most amazing piece to this whole thing is that as soon as Jacob sees the baby, Wolf Boy imprints on the baby. This means he actually falls head over heels in love with the baby.
What?
So his love for Bella gets transferred into the baby.
So the baby's in love with the other baby.
I don't know what...
Or Bella.
I don't even know what the other baby's relevance is
to
this.
No, Jacob's the
Jacob's
the
wolf
kid.
Boy.
Yeah, yeah, but so Jacob's baby... So, Jacob's
so the adult Jacob is now in love with the baby.
Oh, I think you were saying Jacob's baby then falls in love with...
We're not talking about baby. Oh, cute and cuddly.
No, 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 we're talking about sick and depraved pedophile tendencies, all right?
That's
it epic. Says, what's the baby...
Sure David Lynch isn't directing
it says,
this?
He actually, he's so he sure. Actually this says, so... He says David Lynch should be directing this. He actually says, once the baby is out, Bella gets vamped by Edward, blah, 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 and then it goes on and says, this is Devin's words, then comes the most astonishing turn of events in 21st century literature, and possibly in the entire history of awful fiction aimed at tweens. Jacob the werewolf, who has been madly in love with Bella, sees the new baby girl and immediately imprints on her. What this means, in layman's terms, is that he falls in love with the baby. All right? It says, his love has been transferred from Bella to the baby, who has the tongue-shattering name... Renesmee, and because of the science behind imprinting, he'll love her forever. So one day, he's going to stick his wolf dick in this girl that he has seen as a bloody newborn.
That's, oh my
god. Okay. It says here, romance is not dead, it's just being abused by insane Mormon writers. All right, chat room.
I think I'm broken.
Now do we want to see this movie? I will pay anything to see this movie.
Something doesn't feel right.
And I think it should be shot in 3D.
If my brain starts leaking out of my ears in the next half an hour, can you tell me?
Oh, man, it is brilliant. Digital Angel says she's in... Absolutely, I am asking.
I don't look, dude, seriously. I mean pussy. This with the most amount of love, and I really do. Digi, I... don't want you to come see this with us.
I don't. Think
I really
like
don't.
This last
I think
one.
I think we should see this separately. You have love for the stuff, and I know that you'll enjoy it more if you go see it on your own because I have, and you know what? Anyone can say to me that I hate on this film unfairly. I have seen both films now twice. Okay, and I am not running this into the ground based on nothing.
And we will see the third
and
film.
And you know what? If I have to...
Reading the books? Hell no. Digital Angel thinks we should read the
no,
books.
No, 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 because I've spoken to a friend of mine who has read all the books, and she is a girl, okay? And I am saying that she has said to me, it is not going to change your mind because I know that you don't like bad literature. And she said, I read these... and even I didn't like them, and she is the biggest romance novel fan I know.
Yeah.
Okay? And
Furball
based
in our
on
chat
that,
room has said, I'll see it just to hear the audience lose it.
You know what? I actually think if they combine the plot of that movie with Look Who's Talking, they've got a really good comedy on their hands.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to have that because the baby
has
telepathy.
Out of her broken stomach, and then Bruce Willis's voice kicks in.
Can you imagine? It'll be like Spaceballs when the alien comes out. Hello, my baby. All right, look, let's follow that ridiculousness with more ridiculousness. Now, the only reason I'm playing this trailer, and then we're going to get on to our feature review, the only reason I'm playing this trailer... it's because we played this trailer months ago on the show, but we had that really, really bad, poor quality. Excuse me, really bad, poor quality pirate trailer. So just to give it its fair shakes, this is Piranha 3D. The only thing that pisses me off about this,
is this
Josh,
a new trailer?
No, it's the same trailer, but in good quality now, so we can actually see it. Right. The only thing that pisses me off about this trailer is that last shot that has Ving Rhames with the outboard motor has been taken off.
Oh, that was like my highlight of
I know,
this trailer.
And I don't know why, because that was like, you get through the whole trailer, and then you see him with that outboard motor, you go, yeah. But you know,
Ving Rhames is what made me want to watch the movie.
So anyway, so here's Piranha 3D, and then after this, we're going to go straight into our feature review.
The magic of 3D has taken audiences from the vastness of nature to the ocean's depths. But this spring, it will take you to a place unlike any other. Bring the noise!
All right, Lake Victoria, let's hear it!
Bring the noise!
What's going on over there?
Whatever you do, do not go into the water.
The lake is off limits to everyone.
There's something in the water!
Piranha hunt in packs. The first bite draws blood. Blood draws the pack.
Get out of the water, okay?
Whoa, that ended very abruptly.
Oh, wow. Ving Rhames, where were you, man?
So we were just having a discussion in here, and suddenly it went, whoa, wait, it's over. So to the audio listeners, I'll cut all that down for you. All right, we're going to get into our feature review this week. I think we've had enough Stephanie Meyer. Chat room, settle down. Enough Stephanie Meyer.
She has no place within this next section.
No, this next section is gold, and she is not allowed to be mentioned now for the next 20-odd minutes.
Time out on Stephanie Meyer in the chat room.
Should I start nerdgasming now or later, by the way?
Just make sure you have a towel next to you.
I put a newspaper down.
Good, okay. Good. Iron Man 2, directed again by John Favreau. The film was written by Justin Theroux, based on the Marvel Comics character. The film stars Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, Don Cheadle, Mickey Rourke, Scarlett Johansson, Sam Rockwell, and Samuel L. Jackson. Now, I've put down a rough synopsis here. Let's see how we go. This sequel to the 2008 hit Iron Man, or I should say surprise hit Iron Man, has Tony Stark, again played by Downey Jr., facing new challenges with his health. His blood being poisoned by the very device that's keeping him alive, the government, they want the suit, and his company falling into disarray. He just doesn't have time for it. All this and a new threat in the form of a disgruntled Russian genius, Rourke, who wants Stark dead. Did I get that right?
Yep. Throw in a bit of
without doing spoilers,
dysfunctional Stark behavior. He's also mentally unstable.
Well, that's right. I was kind of going with the whole, you know, he's the blood
health.
And the whole bit. Yeah, but basically, it is kind of a rough. There's elements of a lot of different Iron Mans in here, but a lot of it comes from Demon in a Bottle, which is they replace the alcoholism
fantastically done.
With the poisoning of blood. Before we get into our review, let's have a quick look at the trailer for Iron Man, so that those in the world who haven't seen it, and I hope everybody is going to go see it. Here's a little bit of Iron Man.
Oh, it's good to be back.
The notary's here.
Front and center.
I'm sorry, he's very eccentric.
I want one.
No.
If you can make God bleed, people will cease to believe in him. They will be blood in the water. And the sharks will come. All I have to do is sit here and watch as the world will consume you.
Our priority is to get the Iron Man weapon turned over to the United States of America.
I am Iron Man. The suit and I are one.
Contrary to popular belief, I know exactly what I'm doing.
What?
What I saw you do to Tony Stark on that track?
Wow.
You need my resources.
I want to make Iron Man look like an antique.
This whole lone gunslinger act's unnecessary. You don't have to do this alone.
I hope you're ready.
Come
Stark displays textbook narcissism. Agreed?
Yeah. All right. So that was the trailer for Iron Man 2. Now, we actually got the chance to see this, and I do know that for the American audience listening to this, you don't get it till May 7th, I believe the date is, which is, I don't know why there is such a big discrepancy. We don't normally get stuff that early here. Especially on something like this, it's usually a simultaneous release. Mm. We usually get it one day before you.
I think to compensate, they get Prince of Persia a few weeks before us.
Oh, really? And they also got the Losers four weeks before us. And it's often the other way around, but it's very rare that we get something like
especially
this.
Especially with something as big as Iron Man.
We got Kick-Ass first, but it makes sense because it's an English production.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of English stuff here first. But this is an American film. I don't know why. But anyway, that being said, we did go see it. We had a great unofficial Geek Actually movie fan club.
About 10 people came to this week.
It was great fun, and we weren't disappointed. I'm going to start this one off and just say that I went into this with absolute trepidation because I said to you guys before this, I'm not getting my hopes up.
Yeah.
I don't want a Transformers 2. I don't want to sit there and go, I love the first one so much, and wow, can we fail so spectacularly, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't disappointed. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote a post up on geekactually.com. I said it's a rare beast. I actually think it is as good as the first one. Now, I know that there's some disagreement there, but I think...
Only from you.
I think it is as good a film as the first one. Mm-hmm. I think it is Lethal Weapon 2's to Lethal Weapon 1. You know, it is one of those rare things where you go, wow, I can sit there and I can honestly say it didn't lose anything for it being a sequel. Mm. I really, really enjoyed this film, and I think it gave everybody a chance to do a little bit more with the characters. Mm. Pepper got a little bit more to do in this film, and Stark got more meat to work with. You know,
characters like Happy Hogan.
Favreau's character himself. He got more to do.
Even that was kind of a nice little sort of...
I also have to go on record and say that we actually talked about this many weeks ago, in fact, probably several months ago now, when Emily Blunt was pulled unceremoniously from the film by an option by Fox, and she was replaced by Scarlett Johansson. I went, oh no, I don't want this at all. Yeah. Well, I was wrong. Scarlett Johansson was perfect. Perfect.
As a Marvel reader, she is Black Widow.
Yeah, she looks the part perfectly. She moves the part perfectly. And as Josh pointed out, they gave her very little to say.
Yeah.
So she was
perfect.
Black Widow never is a talker.
You know, she doesn't. Black Widow will never say a word when a neck snap does the job.
That's right.
Yeah, I trust Marvel a lot. So I'm really hoping. But when there's the point where her publicist comes to them and goes, she needs more lines, is that going to reflect badly on her character?
But because Marvel isn't going to give to that.
That's what Fox would do, and it's what happened with Halle Berry.
This is why people walk away from Marvel films at the beginning. Now, because Marvel has such strong contracts on all of this, and this is why they can just dump Terrence Howard unceremoniously. Because they basically say, you sign contracts, man. We want this to happen. You don't want that to happen. Off you go.
And let's not forget that both Mickey Rourke and Samuel L. Jackson very nearly weren't in this film.
Because of money.
And Marvel was like, well, we're not going to pay this much, but you know what? I'll give you this non-contract deal.
Samuel L. Jackson's on a nine-film contract, and I think Mickey Rourke's got a couple of films.
It's a really interesting way of conducting.
Absolutely. They're saying we're not going to give you as much money up front, but we're going to give you lots of screen time over many different films. We're going to keep you around for a long time because they're building a universe here. And I think this is the first time in cinema history we're actually seeing this, where one studio is basically saying we're going to make a film where everything interchanges between all of our films. Well, I don't think we've seen that before.
I think that's interesting. I have a few kind of theories on that. And I think the big thing now that everyone's talking about with this being set up is the properties that Marvel doesn't have, like, you know, X-Men with Fox and Spider-Man with Sony and stuff. And, you know, they're not going to give it up, essentially. Mm. But if what's going to happen now is, assuming that this plan goes ahead, by the time Avengers comes out, and they'll have announced their next slate, which I think Kevin Feige, however you pronounce it, has said, you know, then after that and then after Ant-Man, they're going to try and tackle some of the other smaller characters that they own the rights to. When you think about that, that is going to be like 10 films, 10 different solo characters all tied together. That will be the definitive Marvel universe
yeah,
in
absolutely.
Cinema. And movies and movies sure. made by Fox, fans just won't consider canon.
They're not canon, and that's the problem, because they should be able to be interchanged, and Fox already made the mistake by saying with the first X-Men sometime in the future.
Yeah,
so, you know, they completely set themselves, you know. So I just look at it this way, though. Now that Marvel is owned by Disney, this could be just fanboy speculation, but now that Marvel is owned by Disney, Disney has a very big fat checkbook. And I have a feeling that if Marvel starts saying, what we really want to do is bring this back in, Disney will start writing checks. And I can see rights being bought back from things. Because all they're going to do is they're going to say, we really need Reed Richards to continue on. Let's say they continue on. They say, we want to do Civil War. They're going to say, we need Reed Richards. I can see them writing Fox a great big fat check and saying, you know what? You're failing with the films anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you've already made a lot of money. Though.
Fox is either going to have to hold on to a kind of dying franchise, or they're going to have to buckle and sort of and make a deal. And,
yeah.
Well, they're going to lose and that's fans what's gonna if happen. They do that.
And but time will tell. Let's see what happens with this Spider-Man reboot.
But back to Iron Man.
Back to Iron Man. What did you think? I've got to say one thing before we go into our review. Terrence Howard being replaced by Don Cheadle.
Absolutely best move they could have done.
Fantastic. Good thing. Very good.
I was really, really, I didn't Much know about that. Already.
Like, I mean, really... I really did like Terrence Howard's character, but what I realized when I basically probably from the halfway mark of seeing Rhodey in the film was that Don Cheadle plays Rhodey much more true to Rhodey as a character, as a concept, in the very straight, upstanding kind of guy, whereas Terrence Howard kind of had that kind of,
sidekicky.
Yeah, and also very kind of laid-backness and, you know, the thing where it was kind of like he's trying to be a good guy, but he, you know, he'll get drunk with Stark or whatever. In this movie, he's just, here's the military guy that wants rights.
And yet, there's a really good friendship banter between the two of them when they get kicking on in some of the dialogue between them. It really works. Whoa.
Keep doing that. I'm getting excited. I mean, it's going to be, I don't want to mention any story stuff, but, I mean, just the way they, there are certain scenes between Rhodey and Stark that just wouldn't have worked with Terrence Howard.
You
just
wouldn't have bought it. After seeing Don Cheadle in the role, Terrence Howard just feels weak.
Yeah.
And that was the problem. And you didn't feel that weakness during Iron Man. But now that we've got something to compare it to, you go, now it doesn't feel so strong. Okay, Josh, what did you think of the film overall?
Like, I am probably the best person to lead in because, as usual, I have to say that, unlike you guys, I didn't think it was as good. I thought it was a great movie, for sure. I still find the middle drags a bit. Now, I understand that they were setting up for things, and, you know, like, maybe you could put it down to a bunch of things, but I personally felt that towards the middle, it wasn't losing me in storyline. I was just getting a little bit like, can we just get somewhere? Because I know that you're building to something big. But look, apart from that, the actual film itself is fantastic. The characters that they put in work really well. I got worried at about the halfway mark when I started seeing a lot of entry of future storylines, like things that are going to be in the new movies. And I did start going, don't you dare Wolverine this, because you are putting in so much groundwork here that is just dangerous if you don't focus on the film. Now, it pulled itself tight and finished off just how I expected, you know, a Marvel film to finish. So I had no problem with that at all. The one little niggly thing for me is that the final battle between Mickey Rourke's character and we've seen this in the trailer, so this isn't a spoiler, between Iron Man and War Machine was far too short. That's my only downfall for this movie. That actual fight lasts about a minute. And that's
to be fair, though, there is about a
there is plenty of action around that, but I would have substituted some of the scenes of people running around screaming and things flying over the top of them and just given it a bit more. It's not a fault. Don't get me wrong. I am saying personally, I felt cheapened. It's just a personal thing. It's like, oh, come on, man. That didn't actually bother me.
We gotta tread lightly here so we don't give away spoilers. We're probably not going to do a spoiler section for this film, by the way, for our listeners.
We're purists.
We're purists, and we really do think, first of all, it's kind of unfair to the North American listeners because they don't get it till May 7th.
Yeah.
And secondly, really think you should go see the film, and we don't want to spoil it. So
maybe in a few weeks when it's been out for a while,
we might have to show it or something. Yeah. We're going to dance around. There might be some what we call minor spoilers where it's like,
It's not going to wreck the film,
but it's something that happens in the film.
Yeah.
But so just we're going to tread lightly here, and we will try and be as careful as we can. But with that last scene, see, it didn't bother me because it was a tech war. And it was kind of like we had, all, as you were saying, we have all the robots and we've got everything else that's going on during that. That didn't bother me so much. And I don't want to tread very carefully without giving anything away. But
yeah.
You're right. The actual end battle is very, very short. But it's part of a much bigger...
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. No, I personally, I just felt there is no... Like, it would have taken them maybe 2 or 3 minutes worth of extra footage. Just lengthen the battle out a little. Just, you know, a couple of knockbacks with the thing. Make him seem more of a full-on character, you know.
But what I like about, and this is across both the Iron Man films, is that they make, because it's such a character-driven film, half of the battle in the whole movie is through Stark's character himself, you know? Mm. And it's never... I know, it kind of feels like it should have, but...
I just mean, like, for an example...
If
like
John Favreau... I'd always prefer a director to kind of go with their... Rather than... Dude, he should have a longer boss battle because that is the convention.
No. Because that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is Mickey Rourke's character is planned to be... Like, they've signed him on, as far as I understand. That's right?
What? He was just...
As far as I'm aware, he has actually got multi-film, but it won't be... I don't think it's going to be another Iron Man.
So. No.
Yeah, well, I'm just not
Iron
sure.
Man,
but
they've
if,
already
if
said
they,
Iron Man 3 is going to be post-Avengers, like, and it's going to be Mandarin.
It's just... That's what I had heard as well. Look, it's just... To have him... He just feels really weak to me, because it was just like, you're done in like a minute flat. And I just, like, for all the calculatingness of this character, for all the fact that every time they show up in a room, he's one step ahead and he's already left and stuff like that, for him to just
but
hold them...
At the same time, one of the reoccurring themes that runs through the film is his tech isn't as good as Stark's.
Yeah.
And this is one of the...
It's the cheap Russian
knockoff.
It's the whole Justin Hammer syndrome. Now, speaking of Justin Hammer, Hollywood's most underrated actor.
Yeah.
With Sam Rockwell. I've got a clip from Sam Rockwell, actually. So let's have a quick look at Justin Hammer.
Anthony, is that you?
My least favorite person on earth, Justin.
How you
Hammer.
Doing? You're not the only rich guy here with a fancy car. You know, Christine, ever heard from Vanity Fair? You guys know each other?
Hi. Yes. Yes.
Yes, roughly.
We do.
BTW, big story. The new CEO of Stark Industries.
I know.
Congratulations.
I know. My editor will kill me if I don't grab a quote for our Powerful Women issue.
Oh, can I? Sure.
She's actually doing a big spread on me for Vanity Fair. Oh, I thought I'd throw her a bone, you know.
Right.
Right?
Yes. Well, she did quite a spread on Tony last year.
And she wrote a story as well.
I love that line. Sam Rockwell, and if you don't think that Sam Rockwell is a wonderful actor, go watch Moon or Galaxy Quest or Confessions of a Dangerous Mind or any of the number of films that he's been in.
Sam Rockwell really interested me in this film because, as I was saying to Ben and Celine after we saw it, I've now found a little tick that he has that bothers me a little because I found an acting like conglomerate. The thing that I've always loved about him as a character is he has been separate people to me, but now I'm seeing an underlying thing in all his films, which bothered me a little. But what I did love is that he really plays up the weakness of Hammer. Just brilliant. Like, he is
that
so pathetic.
Yeah, you can hear it just in the way he draws out words and sort of
And
tries
also
to...
the way he constantly refers to things to try and make himself seem bigger.
BTW.
I thought that was really brilliant and a good choice as well because I thought he filled that role.
He was a contender for Stark. Way, way, way back before.
Yeah, but so was Tom Cruise. So.
No, but this is for... No, I think he was actually, before Downey Jr. was in the mix, he was up for the thing.
And look, I mean...
So it's kind of funny that then he's come in as the Tony Stark.
He works so well that there's a scene early on in the piece with the car race that you see where he's trying to talk to the reporter, and the screen behind him is showing the car race and Tony Stark doing what Tony Stark's doing, and she's completely distracted by the screen.
And he's trying to get
trying to have the conversation with her, and he keeps kind of glancing at the screen all the time.
And he's like, hey, look, it's just a race. I mean, back to the...
This is
and it just ends up with him just on his own watching the screen,
I thought he did a really good job. He was like, and I'm sure they're going to be bringing him back because there is scope for his character to come back. So
Well, it'll be interesting where they go with him. Because especially towards the end, it was really interesting. Was it you that was saying it? That what was really interesting is you felt like you kind of felt sorry for him, even right up to the fact that even though he was the bad guy in the film, those final scenes where he's, where his character is essentially, you still don't really feel like he's completely, because he's just trying to be Stark.
Yeah.
He's just trying to get there, and he'll get there any means possible.
It's like when, there's a scene where he comes out on stage at the convention, and he comes out and he's trying to even do a Stark arrival, and he's doing a little dance with his feet and the whole bit, and he just looks so he looks so awkward.
I love Sam Rockwell dancing.
So do I. I love his dancing, but when he finally starts to talk, he just comes across as really awkward, and it's like, hey, look at me, aren't I good? He's the Bill Gates to Stark Steve Jobs.
Yeah. I read a really good article that Brian Michael Bendis tweeted on Twitter, and it was about how the storylines are going to lead up to the Avengers, because one of the big questions about the Avengers is who is the main villain going to be. And if you think about it, looking at Iron Man and looking at Hulk, and then presumably with Loki in Thor, they kind of leave a loose end of a villain. You know, this has Hammer kind of vowing revenge. Abomination is in, you know, Blonsky is kind of left there. So it'd be really interesting to see if they actually do bring them back as a team.
One thing that worries me about the Avengers is there has been a lot of talk that it's going to be Ultimate Avengers. And of course, Ultimate Avengers, their bad guy was the Hulk. Mm-hmm. They were formed to bring down the Hulk, you know?
But, what happens in that? If that's Ultimates 1, and then Ultimates 2 is
the Scree.
It's Ultimates 3, but it's basically like sort of the opposite of the Avengers, you know, and it's all kind of organized by Loki. But and then the turning point in that is after having to fight the Hulk sort of comes. Anyway, we're getting too.
We're getting it. That's a film that hasn't been made yet.
Interesting. Although this does lead me to we were kind of touching on before about how I think the one thing that this film that could make it suffer for non-Marvel fans. I mean, I loved every inch of this movie as a Marvel fan. There are the little references that are setting up future movies. That now, when you judge Iron Man 2 as a whole film, there's a whole there's a whole section with Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury that is, you know, I was loving it, but I was thinking for people who have no idea who he is, they don't really. He doesn't come in and say, "I'm Nick Fury, director of SHIELD."
No, but no, he does actually, and that's the thing. I think Favreau was very clever because my wife doesn't read comic books as such, but she got it because we set up S.H.I.E.L.D. in the first one to the point where they made a joke about its name, and we set up that one character who was coming to talk to them, and then it was S.H.I.E.L.D. that actually organized the whole cover up, and we started in the first film to get a hint of how powerful they were, and then to have Samuel L. Jackson when he first walks in, he actually says, "I'm the director of S.H.I.E.L.D."
Yeah,
so
that's in the end of credits thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure it says in Iron Man 2 as well.
I know
well.
He says at the end of one, Stark goes, "Who the hell are you?" And he goes, "I'm the director of S.H.I.E.L.D." And he just goes,
"That's right." Oh. So I'm getting confused because I actually watched Iron Man 1 yesterday. So, yeah.
I believe the first line he says in Iron Man 2 is, "Step away from the donut."
That's right. But we do understand that he is the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. We get that feeling because he's ordering the other two around. We get the understanding of what Black Widow is. I think there is enough power in that, and I gotta love
it's
that.
It's interesting because in all of the Marvel films so far, they've quite well handled the fact that even if you want to take out the comic book nerdiness of people like us, if you were watching them as a thing, they are quite admirably keeping the information good enough so that even if you just watch the films and never read the comic books, you'd be able to connect the dots because the dots are left in the movie beforehand
that's why
I was worried. It's like,
as an example, we won't say what it is, but at one point in the middle of the film, a reference is made to one of the upcoming films. Now, anybody who hasn't read the comic books probably wouldn't know what that is, but they will once they see that and other film, and then they'll go, I remember that from Iron Man.
And that's why I think these films are going to be so significant in terms of film history, because they're setting up the way they're approaching the storytelling is exactly the same way they approach their comics. When they have a big crossover event like Civil War or something, you know, you could be reading a Deadpool comic and it could end with Nick Fury going, you know, to someone you can't see, "Are you going to solve this problem?" And then it cuts to Captain America and he'll say, "I'll take care of it," and that's the end of comic, and then that storyline will be picked up in a Captain America comic, you know what I mean? And they're setting this up in this with references. I mean, I'm not going to say what they are, but there are references to the upcoming Captain America and Thor. And it's setting up. I can't think of anything where this has been
Captain
done
America,
before.
Captain America, Thor, and Avengers. They're actually establishing.
Well, I mean, and Hulk as well. I noticed in the end, this isn't spoiling anything, but there's a scene where he's in a sort of S.H.I.E.L.D. type warehouse, and you do see in the background in one of the screens the campus footage from Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's a really interesting way of...
The thing that's funny is every time we're doing this film review, it keeps tangenting. Mm. And I think that's the interesting thing, because if I was going to class this movie as anything, it is the linchpin joining point for all these other movies coming out this year. It's really so much more than just the film, because it does have every line set up. You've got the continuity.
Which is why it was so important for this film to work.
Mm. Because if we think about it as anything, that's what really I think is the hard bit for me, is because there is part of me going, yeah, I get the joining bit. Can we just get into the film again? And it's just a personal thing. Dave is looking very worried over there. Are we still good?
I think so.
We're still good?
Anyone in the chat room? Do you want to give us...
No, it's not that. I was worried that the audio recording had stopped for a second.
All right. That's right. So I think that's probably one of the things, is that they are setting up a lot of other things in this film, and that's like you start to see a bit of kind of wear for me, because I was there for Iron Man, and, you know, I'm going, yeah, okay, I get the joining points. Can we...
Yeah. I would agree with Dave, though, in that it is at the very least as good a film as Iron Man.
Yeah, right? I don't think it is. I don't think it is a better film than the first Iron Man. I think it is a film where you sit there and go, I can put these two films side by side and have no problem just going one film into the next.
Yeah.
It feels like there is a continuity between them. It feels like they're the same quality. It feels like the same quality of storytelling. You know, the only thing that is a shame is the fact that they had to change that actor.
I'm not saying he was a better choice.
I'm saying it's a shame they had to change him because it does
for continuity's sake
it is that one little thing that kind of niggles at me that we have to change actors, you know.
It's a good choice to do it now. He's been the most of the movie in a suit anyway, so I'm not particularly worried about that. I will say for people, and this isn't a spoiling line at all, I want everybody to watch out for Rhodey's comment on Pepper and Tony's kiss at the end of the movie. It is quite possibly the greatest line in Marvel history.
although, I don't know, there is a comment towards the end that Downey Jr. makes when revelation between him and Pepper is also quite hilarious.
Yeah, no.
Robbing around a food type.
That's probably my favorite bit of the banter between those two, is that one moment that is just so couple relationships kind of thing where he just says, I'm going to go do this, okay? And there's that silence that you hear so many times, which is just that I can't defeat you right now. And you've got to do this. Logic is kicking in. So just go. And we'll deal with this later. Brilliant.
Yeah, and look, there's been... I know Dave Kay, when he was here last week, was actually saying that Gwyneth Paltrow was actually one of his least favorite things. I think she's doing an exceptional job as Pepper Potts. I think the relationship between her and Downey Jr. is perfect. I don't think there hasn't been a missed note in that relationship yet.
Mm. And I find all the relationships between when you see Stark, because as his world starts falling in, you know, you start seeing his stressed out sort of relationship with Rhodey, and then with Potts, and, you know, with everything. But I just found each one so well written, and the dialogue was fantastic, and I was kind of hooked into all the scenes, and there wasn't as much of that in the first film. I thought there was some great verbal, banter between him and Potts, but it never got as serious as it did in this, which I thought was good because that's what it needed. Mm. I mean, there was a risk for it to go into Spider-Man territory, where it just drags it out again, and then by the third film, you think, move on.
That's never going to happen because we're not dealing with Kirsten Dunst.
We've got a lot more. And whenever there's a superhero romance, they're all adults. You know, it feels like they're all adults as well. Whereas with Spider-Man, Kirsten Dunst, it felt like silly teenagers. We haven't mentioned yet, of course, Mickey Rourke.
Another great performance from him.
I thought for a man that, you know, is not, his Russian was pretty good.
He fell
out of it once or twice maybe, but it was very, very believable. And the only problem that I had with anything relating to him was that stupid bird.
See, I love the bird.
That was his idea too. Apparently he just he came in one day with this idea for the bird, and all the backstory, which they ended up writing into it, he just came up with, because he said, I want him to have tattoos, and they're like, why? And he's like, I want him to have been in Russian prison at some point, and they went, okay. And then it got written into the...
I thought Rourke is one of those actors who we actually forget, because he was in the wilderness for so long, we forget that he was a phenomenal actor. I mean, some of the stuff that he did in his early days, from Alan Parker's Angel Heart through to The Year of the Dragon with Michael Cimino, the guy was a brilliant actor. And he went into the wilderness, he went into the boxing, he did all, he just self-destructive completely, right? Now he's made his comeback. He is the Downey Jr. He is another example of a Downey Jr. type person.
It's all through the movie. With, you could even say Rockwell as well, I guess, as the kind of unsung hero.
Well, he's gone through, I mean, Rourke has actually talked about the fact that he's gone through therapy and he's kind of come out the other side, starting really with The Wrestler. And he did a couple of other things too, but The Wrestler was really his return to form. And you just sit there and go, wow, I forgot how good you actually are. Actually, no, Sin City would have been his return, and then The Wrestler.
Yeah, I
think and you sit there and go, kind of I forgot how good you actually were. And I said in my article, now it's funny because I've actually watched the clip since, and it's interesting because Downey Jr. does actually approach him and sits down next to him. But the first impression I have of that scene when he walks into him, Rourke is in custody, basically, after the race. Jr. comes in to talk to him, and he's pressed up against the back wall. And it's almost there's almost this magnetism holding them apart. Because Rourke's screen presence is intense.
I figured out what it was for me, too, because when you just look at him, there's something about him that just, I mean, you wouldn't go anywhere near him. But when he said that line, there's blood in the water, the sharks will come. I went, sharks, that's it. He's a shark.
Yeah.
He just has that.
And then he's got that laugh
where he doesn't say anything and he just looks. He's got the eyes of just such intensity behind him. And he gives the scene where he's taught where Justin Hammer meets him for the first time and Sam Rockwell is just kind of going along and
you're waiting,
non-stop talking.
And you're waiting in that scene for him to do something. It's actually a very tense scene because Rockwell's just rabbiting on. You're waiting for like him to pick up a knife or something. You're waiting,
for
him to do something to Hammer because it's such his... so intense on the other side of that table, you know.
He's just really uncomfortable with the scene because he's just not let like. And it's like when the food's coming and stuff like that. He's just kind of looking at it like, what is this? Why are people serving me? And I thought his character was handled perfectly.
I thought he was terrific. And I actually wait to see what Rourke's doing. I kind of wait to see what Rourke's next projects are going to be. The Expendables, apparently,
He's in that God of War of the Gods thing, isn't he?
Yes, I have heard that as well, So it'll be very interesting to see what he's going to come up with and if he can stay. And this is the big trick, is will he actually implode again or will he actually manage to hold it together this time around? Because I really am enjoying his comeback.
I know that we're very short on time, but just very, very quickly, I think we've only missed one person, so we may as well talk them out quickly as well, which is Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow. look, I mean, I still spent the entire time looking at her going, she's pretty and she's, you know, Scarlett Johansson, and I... you know, didn't really establish her at all as Black Widow, but there was the one scene at the end of her combat bit where she walks down the hallway and sprays mace in this dude's eye, and that was the only time where I actually looked... where I actually looked 100% at her and just went, all right, I'll let you have that.
Look,
one. That
Scarlett
was awesome.
Johansson is not one of my favorite actresses. She's cute as a button. She's got a body to die for, but she's kind of wet. You know, she's not really a really solid, strong actress.
She doesn't have any intensity about her.
There's no intensity until now. And that's the thing. I actually, as soon as she made her appearance in the film, because she was the one I was the biggest skeptic on, and as soon as she made her appearance in the film, I thought, she has an intensity going. You know there's something under the hood there. You know there's something that she's hiding. She carried all that really well. Keeping her not talking that much worked really, really well,
and
because you just got her intensity without... having her trying to deliver lines.
I mean, not going into spoilers, but when you see the gear change between when she is...
scene with Nick Fury, when she walks out.
You just see the change in her face, and Stark says some smart-ass thing, and you just like, bounces off her.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know...
The one line in the film
that I really just don't get is... there's one particular line, it's not a spoiler, where he's sitting there, and he's in a disarray, and he doesn't know what to do, and she's in the room... and he's asking her questions, and she responds with a line that is actually really self-destructive when Tony decides to follow through with the idea of what she says. And I'm kind of, I was wondering the entire time, like, what was the point in that? Because
I don't think she actually liked him very much either.
I can't really answer that, actually, without going into minor spoilers. It's kind of because what her, actual role is.
Mm.
You see, remember in the end where you... Anyway, look, I can't explain it. Yeah, Rest assured, there is an answer to that question.
I don't know.
Explains everything.
All right, let's finish this up and say, Ben... I already know the answer to this, but Ben, would you recommend this to a friend?
Not only would I recommend it, I plan on this very day to go around forcing them all at gunpoint to watch and enjoy it. Oh, wait, we should also mention, stick around for after the credits.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Really, that is like crucial to life. Like all Marvel films, there is something at the end. Mm. So,
and this is something that will...
if you are a Marvel fan at all... then absolutely you must stick to the end because you will just have a little minor geekgasm right there on the spot. You're sitting there going, it is as big of a geekgasm as Nick Fury's appearance in the first.
Can we do a tease thing with the thing that was released yesterday?
No, because that kind of really gives it away.
100%, dude.
We've already said that there are Captain America and Thor references, it's not that much of a spoiler.
Once you have seen this film, then based on what you see...
But that's not a spoiler. This was a promotional photo that was released
Ben has a point, but stop talking about Iron Man at this point, Ben. Stop. All I will say is, if you are a geek and you are interested in the next Marvel film...
Then you've already seen this.
And so we'll just say, because it will be up on Geek actually by this afternoon as well, because I'm going to get a copy of the photo and put it up as well. There has been a press photo released, the first official photo of Thor in costume.
Yeah.
And he looks good. He's not quite the Thor I was expecting, but he looks good.
You see half a picture anyway.
It's kind of from top down a little. But all I can say is this is what they did with Black Widow. I remember when Iron Man was in production, this first weird shot of Black Widow kind of curled up on the ground on all fours came out. And then within a week, there was 15 photos out. So
even with the first Iron Man, the first kind of thing was this Power Rangers plastic looking suit, and everyone was like, oh no, no,
it's and then that sudden image came out where he was smashed into the ground, and everyone so the one photo of Thor has come out. Let's see what comes out in the next week. This is the big factor. But you did call up, and you actually said as soon as Iron Man comes out, you'll make a bet that they start issuing Thor stuff, and there it is.
I'm pretty sure they've wrapped up filming and they're starting post production now. And we hadn't seen a single thing,
but it's still got a year away from release. So it's
It was just unusually quiet because normally, even with Iron Man, there were kind of photos of. Remember, there was that photo of the suit sitting in the lot out the back, and there was not a single bit.
They were very good at keeping this one a secret. Anyway, so we know you're going to recommend people at gunpoint. Josh, would you recommend this to a friend?
Definitely. If you're a fan of Marvel or anything like that, definitely go see it. If you're a fan of action, definitely go see it. If you're a fan of drama, then you may find this a little hard to watch.
I'm going to go so far as to say I recommend anybody to go see it because this is one of those. This is the holy grail of geek films. This is what we've been waiting for. This and the first one, where the general public can also come along and enjoy the film. And it's interesting because when I wrote my first thoughts on Iron Man 2 on the website and now even talking about it here today, what is the one thing we are focused on more than anything else in these films? The acting. Because it's the one thing about this film, this and the first one, Favreau is an actor and he knows how to direct actors and he's really good at casting. And the one thing that I give to both Iron Man films is they do focus on getting great performances and making them great films first, geek films second. And I think that's the big difference here. And I think this is why anybody can go see Iron Man and enjoy it. You don't have to be a comic book geek to go see it. My mother hates comic books. My mother hates fantasy. She's not big on science fiction. She loved Iron Man. Why? She loved Downey.
Exactly.
That's the thing
that separates Iron Man from other movies in that he's Tony Stark first, Iron Man second.
Second, that's right. And then you surround him with really good performances by Gwyneth Paltrow. In the first one, Jeff Bridges. In this one, Sam Rockwell. Cheadle. Samuel L. Jackson. You put these great people around him. You give him something to work with. And it's funny. It has humor. His relationship with that robotic arm continues into this film.
And also worth mentioning, I think... Justin Theroux, the writer of the script, as his first kind of, he did Tropic Thunder, but this is his first real kind of big chunky film, and he did very well, and you can really see the chemistry between his style of writing and Downey's style of acting and improvising and playing around with the lines, and it just works perfectly. You can just feel the every line is delivered so naturally, and the characters are so real. And
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so I think it's consensual. We all say, go out, see this film. All right, let's get this thing wrapped up because we do have an after show and we have to talk about this film really quickly. The after show is probably going to be relatively short this week, but you know we had a long one last week. So anyway, we all say go out and go see it. A little bit of housekeeping. If you agree or disagree with anything that we have said today or about these films, you can send us a voicemail, Sydney number 0280113167, or you can send us an email at feedback@geekactually.com. We do really encourage you to send us email and leave us voicemails. We'll play them on the After Dark and talk about your comments. We also want to just promote a couple of our friends out there. Rob was in our chat room before, so we should push Real Junkies, which is the Real Junkies podcast, which you can find at weekendronan.com, or you can search for it on iTunes. They are a tequila-fueled movie review show, and they're pissed off because they don't get Iron Man until May 7th. And Big Bad Brad is not in the chat room today, but he did come and represent last week in the after show. He's from the Movie Fan House podcast with Charlie and Jesse. Find that at moviefanhouse.com or search for it on iTunes. They're actually a really good podcast. I really enjoy their show a lot. They have a lot of good things to say. They are fans, and they review films from a fan's point of view. And they don't pretend to be anything else. They pretend to be fans, and that's what they are, you know? So I do recommend them completely. How do we find out a little bit more about you guys?
As always, you can find me on the Studio 4 fan page on Facebook. Studio 4 is a student organization. It's a comedy society, and we put on shows that are kind of cheap in value but high in quality. and you know, there's lots of great stuff. We've got open mic nights and things. Anyone who's interested in comedy, it's worth checking out if you're in the Randwick or Eastern Suburbs area. Just
and how can people find that?
You can find it if you go to the website. Also, there's a www.studio4.org.au.
Right.
All spelt out. And Studio 4, just type that in Facebook. It's a fan page for it.
Cool.
And we've also got Twitter and all that jazz.
What about if anybody wants to get in contact with you personally? Anything?
Personally, I am the admin of a lot of those things.
Oh, great.
And my email's on the website.
Fantastic.
And also, just as a personal thing, I'm writing a play at the moment, and I've officially just gotten a producer on board.
Hey.
And we are going to, I think, sort of beginning of June, towards the beginning of June, that's when we hit audition time. And so if there is anyone out there who has actually...
Okay, so Josh, we're going to review his play?
There's many steps ahead before. If we're in a position where I actually get someone to review it, I'll be happy. I still have to finish writing it at the moment.
All right, so Josh, how can people find out more about you?
Well, everyone knows, obviously, that you can always look for me on Facebook itself. You can always go to the Geek Actually or Hello, it's just decided to turn off. Or you can find me at the platforms or Geek Actually fan pages, and, of course, my writings on Geek Actually at the moment.
Fantastic. Now, we also have to promote our other show. We did have two, but one of them's come to a season final. We also have the other show, which is Platforms Podcast, which is a hardcore gamer podcast we put out on Mondays or Tuesdays onto iTunes. Josh, of course, hosts that with Dave Kaziki. What are you doing this week on Platforms?
We are doing a split review. Dave will be doing one, which I haven't actually been able to formalize and make sure of yet, just because Dave's suffering from a bit of jet lag.
Right.
But the one I will also be doing is, of course, Monster Hunter Tri, which has come out.
Yes.
And of course I plan to put quite a few hours into that tonight.
That's going
to
be a big show.
I've limited myself. Just because I like something doesn't mean everybody else is going to.
And you can search for that on iTunes, look for Platforms. You can also find it at our website, geekactually.com. You want to find out a little bit more about me, just go to davemcveigh.net. You can find my Twitter account and so forth there. And I think that's it, guys. I think we're going to get ourselves out of here. One last thing, just very quickly, if you are an iTunes user, it's been a while since we've said this, so we'll just plug this very quickly. We do need more reviews. So if you are an iTunes user and you haven't reviewed us on iTunes, whatever country you're in, please throw a review down. Helps us move up the ranks. We're sitting pretty much regularly now on the featured pages. I just want to go up.
I'll review the show right now.
I got to get it up. So anybody who's an iTunes user, please write a review. Look, good or bad. All right. Yeah. I mean, if you hate us, please let us know.
Just try and keep it
not personal. You know, let's say we don't want personal attacking here.
Right? Oh yeah, and just for the record, man, continue our discussion right at the start of the show. Flash just crashed your computer.
Hey, there you go. On that note, I think we're going to get our way out of here. Thank you very much for joining us again, Ben.
Oh, look, anytime.
And you'll stick around for the after show, I hope.
Oh. Probably.
I hope so. And our second after show guest has just walked in the studio, but we'll come back to that in the after show. And in the meantime, guys, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. We'll be right back.